Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amar El Bay, and this evening we are taking a close examination of the documents and contracts. We're going to be dealing with setting up your estate, making your identity known in commerce, presenting your documents and filings, and what's your human rights, and adding an administrative portion. And these are just a few of the things that we're going to deal with this evening. But my primary reason for doing this is to reiterate to you and go over with you what we do and what we are. You should expect from us in borrowing your documents and how you're supposed to do. First of all, our position is this: we've created a library. And a lot of brothers across the United States are accessing the archives, and they are supposed to investigate the materials in there. If they got some questions or if they need a little aid, give me a call. I can direct you to where the materials are. Because, see, you have to understand something. I'm here in Florida. You may be in New York. You may be in California. You may be in Texas. So in order for you to be successful at what you're doing and use the documentation that you have to enforce, you're going to have to know how to do it. Now, I can point it out to you, but I can't do it for you and it still work for you. Even if I did do it for you and you got out on the streets and tried to exercise your freedom and rights to travel, how are you going to defend yourself when somebody held your hand? It doesn't work that way. So what we are going to go over now is what you're supposed to be looking at and what you're supposed to be using your brain to understand so that you can protect yourself based on the materials that we have put before you, okay? This is how this goes. There's no way humanly possible for me to do something for you and you're able to use it. It doesn't work that way. You and I can be fishing on a lake. Both of us can have our fishing pole in the water at the same time. But if I'm catching all the fish and you ain't, and every time I catch a fish, I give it to you, what do you know about fishing? Absolutely nothing. Nothing. Because you haven't caught a fish. So what we're going to do is go over some things for you here this evening so that you can learn how to do this thing. Y'all hold on a minute. We'll be right back.
Prior to the turn of the century, 95% of the people inside the United States were self-employed. Immediately after the turn of the century, we got 95% of the people working for just 5% of the population. What happened? Well, we have a lot of people that pay attention to television. You see your politicians will come on there, and they'll talk about the problems that we have, and then they're talking about they're doing everything that they can to make sure that we provide more jobs. Well, if you're providing more jobs, common sense tells me that there'll be more and more people that are working for somebody else. When are you going to tell us about the people who are self-employed, you know, like the 95% in the beginning when we were prosperous people? But that's not the case. However, what we're here doing is we're providing you an opportunity to be an employer instead of an employee, so that you can provide opportunity for other employers to be self-employed. Go to www.TahakaPowerNomics.net. That's www.TahakaPowerNomics.net. Once you sign up for the Platinum Matrix, you can receive absolutely free Tahaka Archives Master Library. We'll give that to you absolutely free as a result of you taking responsibility for your own self and then becoming an employer instead of an employee.
Greetings, family. We're about to embark on the one-year mark of Summit of the Moors. Summit of the Moors is a galvanizing event where we take all Moors from around the planet and we work on one particular agenda. And we have been working this agenda. And that agenda is three primary things: food, clothing, and shelter. Now, we are working on creating financial sectors owned and controlled by Moors in order to capture and create inheritable wealth for our children. We're talking about investing, partnerships, building, the application of controlling independent agriculture systems, real estate, housing, land, manufacturing, distribution, wholesale. These are the things that will make a nation. These are the things that will secure wealth for our children and our grandchildren's children. Summit of the Moors, January 10th through the 11th. Check us out on the website, summitofthemoors.com. Peace.
Okay, Moors, we're back. Now, what we're going to deal with here this evening is we just want to touch on some things. And all of the materials that we're going to go over this evening come straight out of Tahaka's Archives Master Library. If you went over to www.TahakaPowerNomics.net and you decide to have your own business, you can get Tahaka Archives absolutely free. Once you sign up for the Platinum Matrix, that's a one-time fee of $79.99. Okay, you get a full benefit package. And after you get that, you also get Tahaka Archives absolutely free. You're only responsible for making payments on your full benefit package while you build your network at the same time. Now, I have yet to make a payment on a benefit package because I simply share the opportunity with other people. They get involved, and the company simply debit the $39.99 right out of their account. Every time you get somebody involved, that's $80 in your account. It's there every Friday. You can't beat that. We ask for a donation of $60 for Tahaka's Archives, but if you are operating your own business, you decide to get into the Matrix, have your own business, you pay that one-time fee of $79.99, we're going to give you absolutely free Tahaka's Archives. We ask for a donation of $60, but you get it free. So that means that you have got a business opportunity, full benefit package, and a free library, and you actually spent, $15, $20, $17, $18 for your own opportunity. It's a no-brainer. Go to www.TahakaPowerNomics.net. Okay? All right. All right. Now, let's deal with the bankruptcy of the United States of America. And I'm going to go over this with you here. We're going to read a little bit of it. It says Speaker Representative James Traficant Jr. addressing the House. Mr. Speaker, we are here now in Chapter 11. Members of Congress are official trustees proceeding over the greatest reorganization of any bankruptcy entity in world history, the U.S. government. We are setting forth, hopefully, a blueprint for our future. There are some who say it is a coroner's report that will lead to our demise. It is an established fact that the United States federal government has been dissolved by the Emergency Banking Act, March 9, 1933, 48, Statute 1, Public Law 89-719 declared by President Roosevelt being bankrupt and insolvent. House Joint Resolution 192, 73rd Congress, in session June 5, 1933, Joint Resolution to suspend the gold standard and abrogate the gold clause, dissolve the sovereign authority of the United States and the official capacities of all United States governmental offices, officers, and departments, and is further evidence that the United States federal government exists today in name only. Okay, there you have it. The bankruptcy of the United States, United States Congressional Record, March 17th, 1993, Volume 33, page H1-1303. This document is inside the House of Archives. And so let's take a look at what does that mean? What does that mean? Okay, so if it means that the United States is operating in a bankruptcy and have been doing so since 1933, we need to know when did it come out of it? When was the gold brought back? Franklin Delano Roosevelt called for all Americans to turn in their gold and made it against the law for you to be caught with any. You could be fined or imprisoned. Okay. File Chapter 11, bankruptcy for the whole country, made the country insolvent. And because you couldn't pay your bills and stuff, we issued out joint resolution, abrogated. So we need to look up the word abrogate. Okay, so that's what we need to do. All right, and we need to dissect this thing so we can get a clear and concise understanding of where we are inside the United States. The only question that we need to ask is, when was the United States bankruptcy paid off? In other words, when? On what day? And do you have any evidence on paper? And when was it made public knowledge that surety has been brought back to the United States? In other words, every debt note that we have now should officially have gold behind it. Everybody that gold was taken from in 1933, the people who turned in the gold, all the gold has to be returned to the people. You understand how that works? See, there's no other way. There's no legislation, no voting, no nothing. If you took the gold from the people, you have to give the gold back in order for surety to be brought. If you bring surety, give the gold back to the people, and the people would be more than happy to give you what? The debt notes back, and they will be able to use what? Real money. Now, if there is no real money, then the only thing that we have is what was given to us, House Joint Resolution 192, our signature on paper, our human energy, and our signature on paper is surety for whatever it is that we're trying to get. But it seems that we don't understand that, and as a result of that, what has been taking place is they have taken our signature, turned it around, and tell us, well, okay, here's your signature right here. You owe us money. And if you don't pay us this money, we're going to put you in jail. You go to court, we're fining you $500 for court costs, fining you $300, $3,000 for the trespass and all this right here. Now, it's smack dab in the middle of the bankruptcy without surety being brought. House Joint Resolution 192 is still in effect. So, if you know this here, it stands the reason that when you deal with entities on contract, you may need to remind them so they won't get it twisted. They'll clearly understand that, okay, this guy or this young lady knows. We're going to have to try to come up with something. Are we just going to have to outright break the law? Now, once they outright break the law, that's when you have to make sure somebody pays for that. You got to make sure they pay. You need somebody to clearly define for you when the surety was brought. In other words, when has the United States come out of the bankruptcy? Can you please point me to the documentation that I can see with my own eyes that clearly shows that the United States has come out of the bankruptcy? They have taken all the gold that they took from the people and gave it back to the people. And if the people have died that they took it from, show me where you gave it to their descendants or their relatives. Or if it's put in an account somewhere, if they had no relatives, just show us the ledger. Show us the account where the money exists and where it should be sitting until surety is brought. And another arrangement has been made to pay it to some relative in the family, regardless who it is, you see. So until that time comes, we'll keep on dealing with that. So we want to keep this as our foundation inside the United States of America. We cannot see, when you get off of that understanding, then we have a problem. If we got the Federal Reserve inside the United States constantly printing Federal Reserve notes. Now, notice I say Federal Reserve notes. I didn't use the term money. I didn't give you any indication that they were doing something to give you something. No, they are creating a product. The product belongs to them. It is a Federal Reserve note. It is worthless paper, and it has absolutely no real money behind it, period. We're going to look at some definitions of terminology here. The first definition I want to look at is the general executor. A general executor is one who is appointed to administer the whole estate without any limit of time or place or of the subject matter. Executor, he whom another commits by will the execution of his last will and testament. Okay, so let's take a look at creating a will. Now, we create a will. We clearly outline our will. And it is very, very important for us today to have a will. A lot of us do not have a will. Now, we're going to get to trust. Trust is extremely important. Actually, we're going to get to that. But if you use creating your will just as practice, we're going to say we got a will. We outline everything in the will, who's going to get what they're going to get. All of this has to be clearly defined in your will. Now, the administrative portion of your will is attachments that you attach to your will. Now, what you don't want to do when you get this will done is you do not want to go and hire an attorney who is a member of the bar, which is a foreign British corporation. You want to do your own will and file your will into the record, into the court, or the court of records, the court of deeds, as a deed. You want to have the administrative portion of that will. The administrative portion of that will is an affidavit of identity, which clearly identifies you as not a citizen, because the United States is a corporation. Remember, the United States is a corporation. They are insolvent. And corporations don't have citizens. Now, if you don't believe me, go to Walmart and ask to speak to the general manager and ask him how many citizens did they hire to work for Walmart. How many citizens do Walmart have? Not employees, but citizens, you see. Okay, so we get the affidavit of identity. We also want to get a copy of the Declaration of Human Rights, which clearly outlines your rights on a national scale, an international scale. If you are a person of African descent, that means you are aboriginal and indigenous to this hemisphere as well as Africa. So you get your rights of indigenous people. people documents, and you study these documents because you can extract information from these documents to form other documentation to deal with whatever it is that you got to do. But you cannot just take a document, put it somewhere, and then just wait for the document to do something and somebody else read it. It doesn't work that way inside the United States. You need to have a clear and concise understanding of everything that you have. If you put it, if you're filing something into the court record or as a deed or what have you at any given point in time, you need to be able to understand what it is that you're filing there and be able to tell somebody what it is that you got. Okay. Now, we have the affidavit of identity. We have the Declaration of Human Rights. We have the rights of indigenous people. Now comes the estate letter. Now, I just read to you the general executor and the executor. I just told you what that was. But now the executor manual, you want to study that so that you can clearly understand all the power of the executor position. You want to understand that. So you're able to use that power and authority based on what you know, based on your understanding of it. A lot of people say overstanding. Okay, whatever term you want to use, it's fine. Just as long as you know it. And if you know it, then you can do something with it. Okay? All right. Let's look at the term warrant. To authorize, to give authority or power to do or forbear anything by which the person authorized is secured or saved harmless from any loss or damage by the act. A commission warrant, an officer to seize an enemy. We are not warranted to resist legitimate government, except in extreme cases. To maintain, to support by authority, approve. To secure, to exempt, to privilege, in law, to secure, to a grantee, an estate granted, to assure, warrant, protect the defender from ONFR warrant, from Frankish warrant, was authorized warrant, and so on and so forth, to observe all, since above, non-vi-notion, a permission from a superior which protects one from blame. There's you want to take that term and clearly break it down until you get a concise and clear understanding of what you're dealing with here when you're dealing with the term warrant, because I get a lot of people. I talk to a lot of brothers and sisters, and a lot of times they tell me, okay, well, they've issued a warrant. Okay, well, what is it that you know about the word warrant? What is your clear and concise understanding about it? You know, instead of just, hearing the word, well, they say they're going to issue a warrant. Well, okay, what are you panicking about? Do you know what it is? Because if you know what it is, there's a possibility that you may be able to do something about it. But if you just keep having this fear, you don't look up no definitions, you don't clearly understand it, You don't have any options. You don't know your rights. You don't know how to combat anything because you have not clearly understood the definition of what they are talking about when they use the word warrant. All right, here we go again. Warrant, to keep safe from danger. For warrant, see warrant, meaning to guarantee to be of quality, is attested from late. Sense of guarantee as true is recorded from. And so on and so forth. So you want to look up everything that you don't understand. If it's anything that you don't understand, inside the archive, we got, what, almost $3,000 worth of dictionaries. There's no reason under the sun for you to leave the solution to the problem to call somebody else to ask them to define the problem for you when you already got it in your hand. That makes absolutely no sense to me. That doesn't make any sense to me. If you have a document and there's something in the document you don't understand, look it up. Don't put the solution to the problem down and go outside looking for somebody to give you the answers or something you just put down. That don't make no sense to me. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. So what we're trying to do here with these archives is we're trying to make sure that you have everything you need to succeed. Everything you need to succeed. Take your time. Look around. Look it up. If it's a word you understand, look it up. Okay, let's continue with this. Let's look at the nature of the estate. Never refer to the estate as your estate. But for convenience and economy of words in this document, the complier is doing it anyway. The all caps name is foreign to the United States. Statutory admission that the estate and executive office are immune from the jurisdiction of the United States and the states is found in the Foreign Immunities Act because the estate is a creditor in 28 U.S.C. 1300 LFSIA, foreign state means foreign estate. Just substitute the word estate for the word state. When reading the act, the estate and the man functioning in the executive office when located at General Post Office, United States, Minor Outlying Islands, so on and so forth, is described as sovereign under the Sovereign Immunities Act, applies because the estate is foreign at USMOI. Now, I just read that statement to you. So therefore, if it's something that I said that you don't understand, then what I would do is I would write it down, I would go into the law books, and I would look up the meaning of it. Because if I look up the meaning of it, I'll get 10 times more understanding of it. And I'll clearly understand it because I have defined it for myself. I'm able to use it much more effectively because I have defined it for myself. Okay? All right. Now, I can go on, and we will be coming back to this estate in a moment. But I want to go over here to something else. And I want to take a look at something here for a second. All right. We've already been there. Okay, we're going to take the letter. Now, the estate letter doesn't deal with an address. What it deals with is strictly just out of U.S. corporate jurisdiction, period. You got your title, John Henry Doe, Estate, Executor Office, Nation, North Dakota, General Post Office, East such and such Avenue, 220 so-and-so, Bismarck, United States, Minor Outlying Islands, okay, near, on the private side, 9998, not 9999, but 9998, done by the light of the day, the 8th of November, 2010. Okay, now, this estate letter is part of the administrative portion of your will. Once you get that done, you get it done right, you get it signed, notarized, and all that stuff, you add that to your will. But you want to clearly understand the authority and the power of what you have. You do not want to use an estate letter, have it assigned to the case, assign it to the judge ignore the letter, and you sitting back waiting on him to do something different because you don't know nothing about what you got because you have not studied anything. You just got the document, and you expecting the document to do something for you. You're like the man sitting on the lake with a fishing pole in the water, and the other man fishing and catching fish. He waiting on it. Well, I ain't doing nothing, so that means you ought to give me something. Well, how is that going to help you be a fisherman? It's not going to help you at all. Not one bit. You got to sit there until you catch a fish. And when you catch a fish, then you know how to fish. You learn how to fish. And one of the saddest stories I ever heard is a young man, he listened to his buddies. His buddies told him, you need to get this document here, and you need to file that document there into the record. The judge got a hold of the document, He had to file it just like they say do. But the judge said, young man, did you do this? He said, yes, I did, sir. He said, wow, this is beautiful work. This is fantastic. He says, neat, it's legible, very colorful. It's signed, it's got a notary stamp on it all. He said, well, can I ask you a question? He said, yes, sir. He said, what does it mean at the bottom down here when it says all rights reserved? He couldn't answer. He didn't know jack. And he said, well, okay, hold it. Let's forget about that. What does it mean without prejudice? All rights reserved without prejudice. What does that mean? Once again, dumbfounded. He put a document in there, and he waiting on somebody to give him a fish, you see. So we don't want to do that. We want to know this stuff. We want to learn this stuff. And in order to learn, we're going to have to read. I'm sorry to have to tell you that. But you're going to have to read. That's just the bottom line. You have to read. You have to understand. You have to comprehend this stuff. You have to know this stuff. You're going to have to know it. That's just the bottom line. Ain't no way around it.
Okay, brothers and sisters, listen up. If you got a problem with getting rid of your mortgage contract, if you're receiving anything in the mail from them, if you got a problem with student loans, banks, credit card companies, child support, the Internal Revenue Service, go to newfreehelpgroup.com. That's www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And when you get there, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we get you set up to get rid of the whole thing. www.newfreehelpgroup.com.
Okay, Moses, we're back. Now, I'm inside my archives now, and right at the top it says, Bloomberry Reference Dictionary of Law, 4th edition. Oxford Dictionary of Law, 5th edition. The Essential Law Dictionary, 1st edition. John Bouvier's Law Dictionary, revised, 6th edition. We got Black's Law on down the line. We got Law 1 through 90, entire Black's Law set of reference. There's absolutely no excuse whatsoever under the sun. There is no excuse, period. It's all there, point blank, right in your hands. The fishing pole is in your hand. All you have to do is cast your line and catch your fish. It's just that simple. We got my alphabet book. We got tons of information. We got etymology here. You got the Egyptian search, the Africans who wrote the Bible. All this information, it comes right up under the heading of Law Dictionary, right there in Talker's Archive. And when you get that, just if you got a question, if it's something that you understand, then look it up. Look it up. You got it right there in your hand. It's in your hand. The fishing pole is in your hand. You can catch a fish. See, you can take a man and give him fish all day long. But you never know how to survive until he starts fishing on his own. So the best thing to do is teach him how to fish. Teach him how to fish, and that way he can feed himself and his family all the days of his life once he learns how to fish. But if you keep holding his hand, he's never going to do anything. And when you do turn him loose, he's going to fall down because he's been leaning on you all along. You had to turn him loose. You're going to give him a pole, teach him how to fish, and then walk away. And once he starts learning how to fish, he can take care of himself, you see. Now, let's continue on with this executive office. But before we do that, I want to just add that this is only one of the documents that you're going to add to your will. And this is the estate letter. But before you add the estate letter, see, this is something that you just don't read to say you read it. We're talking about reading, understanding, and comprehending, and using. This is what we're talking about. Okay. So you got an entire manual. If you're trying to understand trust, we have Weiss Trust Manual that you can study before setting up your trust. If you don't understand, whatever it is you understand, you got the law books right there in the same library. Look them up so you can understand. There's absolutely no excuse. There is no excuse. You have everything you need to succeed. Everything is already in your lap right there. Okay. Now, we're coming back to the estate letter, but let's go on. Now, we've got the Affidavit of Identity. We've got the Rights of Indigenous People. We've got the Declaration of Human Rights. And we got the estate letter. Next, we want to add a Notice of Understanding and Intent in Claiming Right. Now, that is document is when you get a chance to let anybody that read that document get a clear and concise understanding of what you know about what's going on inside the United States, what has transpired, what you see it. And at that point, if there's anything in there that is nobody should be able to come and say, well, okay, that's not true. No, because you're giving them, you're putting them on notice of your understanding and intent, your intent and your claim of right based on the facts that you know. We know for a fact that the United States filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy in 1933. We know that the same year the House Joint Resolution 192 was issued. Now, these are facts. We can also go on to say, talk about the Federal Reserve and the fact that we have debt notes and that it's not money. We this is your opportunity to let it rip in a document. You sign it, get it notarized, carry the weight of the Secretary of State, and you attach that to your will. Then we come to your last document, which is Judicial Notice and Proclamation of Status. Now, for those people who've been classified as Negro, colored, and black, it's an opportunity for you now to let them know that there's a terrible mistake been made at the hospital on that birth certificate, because we have a signed a document here and been notarized clearly outlining our identity, a judicial notice here that is attached to a nationality, because the previous document that we already have attached to this will in the Declaration of Human Rights clearly states that nobody should be deprived of a nationality. And anybody do so, they have a serious problem. But if we already have these things filed, and we've got them filed in the records as a deed, even if we have to get it filed miscellaneously, they are on the record. Okay? So it is at this point that any time our human rights are violated, or any time that we are violated as Negro, colors, and black, and we are not Negro, colored, and black. We are Moorish Americans. So now somebody is faced with a very serious crime that ranks with genocide and treason. And there's a massive lawsuit that we're talking about, placing liens and everything, you see. So it's important for you to clearly understand the documents that you have so that you can use the power there. And you can use the power once you understand it. And you can define everything in it. You see. So I just wanted to point that part out. And, of course, we get our will done up, and everything that is in your will is applicable to you. And we get that filed. And you have to keep in mind that you can go back and you can add to or take away from things in your will at any given point in time and refile it. Just make sure that that is done and file it to the court record. Now that we got that done, we want to learn everything about how to enforce what we have, okay? Now, that is what I want you to concentrate on clearly understanding for yourself. I've given you the fishing pole, and it is up to you to do the research and clearly find out how you go about enforcing what you got. Now, keep in mind, let's get a clear understanding of what you did. You have taken your will, your authority and place it on file. You got a will on file. You got an administrative portion attached to that will. You outline in the will that these are the following administrative portions that's attached to this will. See Exhibit A1, Affidavit of Identity. See Exhibit A2, Declaration of Human Rights. See Exhibit A3, Rights of Indigenous People. See Exhibit A4, Notice of Understanding and Tenant Claim of Right. See Exhibit A5, Estate Letter. See Exhibit A6, Judicial Notice and Proclamation of Status. And there are other documentation that you can add, but whatever it is that you add in that will, make sure that you are able to define it, because if you can define it, you can enforce it. And any time it's violated, then it breaks the violator. Instead of having something in the court, instead of getting violated and looking around waiting on somebody to do something, because you put some documents somewhere that you don't know nothing about. That is amazing to me. We don't want to do that. We don't live like that. We don't have that kind of thinking. In my opinion, I call that stinking thinking. We don't want to do that. We don't want to sit nowhere and not understand what's being said around us, especially when it involves us. That's like a dumb animal. You know, you sitting there, and people are sitting up in the courtroom, and they're using legal terminology. You don't know nothing about what they're saying, but you sitting there waiting on something to happen. You don't even know how to object because you don't know you don't know nothing. You see, the Prophet Noble Drew Ali said that if I can just get the Moors to think, if I can just get you to think, you'll save yourself. He wasn't talking about saving you. He was talking about, he said, I brought you everything you need. Now take it and save yourself. In other words, I put the fishing pole in your hand. Go ahead and fish now. Don't sit there and wait on me to bring you no fish, because as soon as I stop bringing the fish, you're going to be hungry, and you're going to know what to do, because you ain't never done nothing. You have to not, and I don't want y'all to get me wrong. I'm not fussing at y'all tonight. Okay, I'm lying. Yes, I am. I want y'all to learn this stuff, man. I want you to be able to defend yourself, so I can be proud of you. I mean, I got a lot of brothers and sisters out there. I got some brothers and sisters out there. They have gotten a hold to the fishing pole, and they pulling some stuff out of the ocean I ain't never seen. I mean, they bad, boy. I had brother jumping on the bank, and the bank is looking for a hole to get out of. Money's coming. They be like, my goodness, when they get, is they going to go away? Lord have mercy. What can we do to get them off us? Because they've learned this stuff. And they're very, very effective, because see, this is a new frontier to be able to know something and to take it and use it to defend yourself. You see, you got a whole lot of people that you may be surrounded by that's been victims all their life, and when you try to talk to them about saving yourself, the first thing out of their mouth, oh man, you go. Hey, man, you gonna go to jail, man. Man, I'm telling you, man, go get a lawyer. You need to go get somebody. Well, then you have to ask them, well, would it be all right with you if I use my own brain? Man, I'm telling you, man, see, you stuck on stupid. You ain't gonna use your brain. You ain't got no business using that. Lord have mercy. What you talking about? Use your brain? No, you ain't supposed to do that. I don't use mine. What makes you think you ought to use yours? Boy, you better go get somebody. I had a guy one time, and this is true. I had been juicing raw fruits and vegetables. That's all. No meat, no cooked food, just nothing but raw fruit and vegetable. If I ate anything, it'll be fruit, a piece of vegetable raw. Other than that, I'm juicing raw fruits and vegetables. I did this for 2 years. We was on the job. I was sitting outside to the table. Somebody had told him. Now keep in mind, I've been doing this for 2 years before he found out about it. And somebody told him, that's all I did. He came out, he said, you don't do nothing but juicing? I said, no, that's all I do. I juice, and you know, I said, if I eat anything, it'll be raw fruits and vegetables. He said, man, he said, you better eat some meat before it's too late. I said, okay, bro. He said, you keep on. He said, you gonna mess around? You better, man. Now, I would think that if I had been doing this successfully for 2 years and outperforming every man on the job for 2 years, it would seem to me, common sense would tell me that it would have been too late a year ago. But that wasn't the case. But he assumed that because I wasn't doing what he was doing, that I had to hurry up and start doing what he was doing. Otherwise, something going to happen to me. You keep on living like that. You better get Jesus or something going to happen to you. Oh, Lord. Anyway, I won't get all down about any of that. But now we're going to go on to something else. Let's take a look at the next phase. Now, if you are going to deal with trust, and let's say somebody tell you, I can do your trust for you. All right? I'll do all the documents and stuff. You need a trust. I'll go ahead and get you set up with the trust, and you're going to have to fill it out and, you know, put your name and all this stuff in there, and, you know, so that you will have your trust. My question to you is this. I need for you to spell trust. For you, if somebody done you a trust, I need you to clearly define everything there is to know about that trust. I need you to tell me, what does it mean to have a trust? I need you to tell me how that trust functions. Give me all the ancient historical background information on trust. Can you tell me about trust law? Are you thoroughly furnished in the knowledge about trust? Because if you are, then you are officially qualified, in my opinion, at that point to have a trust. Don't tell me, well, you know, I got my trust did up, and I filed this over here, and anything you're telling me, I need you to define what you got, what you're doing. Tell me all about what you filed. Tell me the power of it. Tell me what you can use it for. Tell me the ins and outs. Tell me all about it. You see. So what I would do when it comes to trust, I would take the best trust manuals in the world and study these manuals first. If somebody's doing a trust for me, I need to be able to define everything that's in it, how it functions, how to manage it, the terminology of everything in it. I need to understand that. If there is a trust and there's trustees and there's beneficiaries and so on and so forth, everything that's in there, I need to be able to clearly define what it is that I have. If it's violated in some kind of way, I'm able to defend it because I know what it is. I've defined every inch, every nut and bolt, every wiggle pin, every screw, every hinge, everything in it. I know all about it. Now, I've had brothers contact me, and they see my picture on Facebook and LinkedIn and other places with me standing out with my book with the documents in it, and they see me with my own matching tag on the back that I created and all this right here. And their question is, man, I need to know how to get my my mortgage plates so I can exercise my freedom of right and travel. Where can I get my plates from? I said, well, first of all, before we even try to get some plates to put on anywhere, let's learn how to spell plate. Let's start there. We're going to say that I tell you where you can get the plates from. You go get the plates. You put on the car. You got out there on the streets with it. Police stop you. You're driving like say. You tell them, man, you don't see the plates on there? Let me see your driving license and registration, I said. So then they take you, and you in your car, put both of y'all in jail. You got the plates on there. You expected the plates to do something because you seen somebody else's plates on their hat. You did not stop. Common sense did not tell you that you needed to actually use the brain. It didn't tell you that. You just saw something, and monkey see, monkey do. That's it. That's all you seen. Because when I actually had that happen right in Jacksonville, when I started doing it, the next thing I know, I would go up to the barbershop and park my car there. The police sit right there in the chair and looking right at my tags and go out in his car and they call downtown and they tell him, no, don't mess with him. You know, don't mess with him. But now the other brothers in the barbershop, they see me and they go out and they ask me nothing. They ask not one single question. They go out and put some stuff on their car and start riding. They start going to jail left and right. And the man at the barbershop tell me, man, you need to take that off there. They'll start putting them in jail back there. I said, no, I'll tell you what, I'm going to do this for 6 more months. I'm going to do it for 6 more months. And when I go to jail, I make sure I call you and let you know I'm in there. And then I come back into the barber shop. He said, man, you still ride around with that stuff over there? Yes, sir. I done told you. Why would I go to jail? Because they put people in jail back there. I say, for what? Well, something must be wrong with it. You know, everybody else in America got regular tags. They got Florida license. I got Florida license. I say, so I'm going to run off a cliff so it cause everybody else running off it. All right, you keep acting through. I'm telling you. Remember, I done told you. My people are amazing. They never cease to amaze me. They don't never stop amazing me with the singing. It is amazing. Now, let's talk about the historical background of the General Post Office. The General Post Office has its beginning in Scripture and is established and continued by post treaties. General Post Office is the post office generally. The post treaties are general post to general post. Okay. So that means like if you got we got the Los Angeles Rams Stadium and then you got the Minnesota Vikings Stadium and then you got the Detroit Lions Stadium and then you got the Jacksonville Jaguars Stadium, and you know, and so on and so forth. We're going from post to post, one conglomerate to the other. Now we got inside every city, every major city that I know of, you got the General Post Office. That's the big post office, all right. And then you got small branches. Those are local post offices in commerce. There's a difference between general post and local post. Okay, now. And it's all defined in right there in Scripture. Jeremiah 51:31. One post shall run to meet another, and one messenger to meet another, to shoot the king of Babylon, show the king of Babylon that his city is taken at one end. Okay, from post to post, not from post to a branch office. You see. So if we clearly get definitions of terminology about what we're doing, we'll be quite successful in our endeavor. Okay? Hold on a second. We'll be back.
It's real simple. First you get the power. Then you get the money as a result of having the power. And as a result of having the two, now you're officially ready for the girl. Most of us do not understand inside the United States the reason why we as people of African descent are in the condition that we are in is because we have no businesses. We have no power. We have no wealth. All the other countries that are here, if you look at the Koreans, the Japanese, the Chinese, the nail, the industry, the hair industry, and so on and so forth, you don't see these people filling the prisons. Why? Because these people have functioning businesses. Get your own business. Go to newfreehelpgroup.com. Click on the link to Hakka Powernomics Network. And when you do, call me, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have the smokiness business going right now, which will generate the capital and set up the network for you to accumulate the wealth you need. And that way you can take back your communities, take your neighborhoods, and transform them into thriving communities. Call me, Tahaka Mana Elbe, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Examine that page. Just check out everything on the page. Check out the links. Check out the video. Call me, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m.
Greetings, family. We're about to embark on the one-year mark of Summit of the Moors. Summit of the Moors is a galvanizing event where we take all Moors from around the planet and we work on one particular agenda. And we have been working this agenda. And that agenda is three primary things: food, clothing, and shelter. Now, we are working on creating financial sectors owned and controlled by Moors in order to capture and create inheritable wealth for our children. We're talking about investing, partnerships, building, the application of controlling independent agriculture systems, real estate, housing, land, manufacturing, distribution, wholesale. These are the things that will make a nation. These are the things that will secure wealth for our children and our grandchildren's children. Summit of the Moors, January 10th through the 11th. Check us out on the website, summitofthemoors.com. Peace.
Okay, Moors, we're back. We want to look at the we're coming back to the estate, because we're going to get that, because that's very, very powerful document. That document alone, if we understand all of its components, we can use it very, very effectively, but we cannot use it if we have not defined it. So I want to get back to it, point out some stuff in there that you need to clearly understand, because just reading something is not enough. When you read something, you want to get everything out of what you are reading until you can concisely understand all of its components in order to use it to the utmost efficiency. Now, the estate letter is extremely powerful, and once you learn everything that you can do about it, and once you have the rules of the game, which is actually just contract law, because everything operates on contract law. Everything in the United States operates on contract law. You get married, it's a contract. You buy a can of poker beans out of the store, you enter and exit the contract. You buy a car, contract. Buy a house, contract. Everything's a contract. Mailman, he better bring a pile of paper, pile of contracts. everything operates on contract. So it's a very, very simple game. And once you understand the rules, and once you know how to get the maximum potential out of your position based on what you know about all the tools that you have. See, it doesn't do you any good. And I have actually seen men out. I build caps and columns for bridges. I frame houses, put on roofs, laid local pipes, pipes for water sprinkling systems for entire stadiums, football stadiums. Formed carpenter on top of bridges, framed houses from start to finish, decked out roofs. Went inside there, did commercial piping. We dropping 36-inch concrete pipe across the nation. Been there, done that. But I have seen men come out there in the field who did not know how to use a shovel. Now, if you put some tools down in front of him and put that shovel down there and ask him, to pick out which one is the shovel, he can pick it up every time. You ask him how to use it, he go to try to use it in all kind of ways, except the only way that it was designed to be used. Aim it one way. Well, actually, one way to use to dig with, but you can use it another different way, but I have seen men try to take it and use it backwards. I've seen that. I've seen men try to use skill saws incorrectly. I've seen people go to the store, get something that they're going to have to put together, tables and, you know, different objects to come in a box that clearly comes with instructions. They'll take the instructions along with the rest of the wrapping and paper and throw it in the garbage and then sit down with the object and try to figure out how to put it together. I hate to laugh, but that is one of the most amazing things that I ever seen in my life. And then he asked me, where you think this little screw go? I said, well, where the instructions? Oh, man, I don't need that. But undoubtedly, you do. You asked me a question when the people that gave you the solution. Amazing. But anywho, let's move on. So every document that you deal with, once again, you want to be able to clearly define everything in it, everything on it, and what it's designed to do, how to use it, when to use it, where to file it. All of this stuff has to be understood by every one of the documents that you have attached to that will. Now, that makes you very, very powerful if you are able to do that. You are able to do that not only going into a courtroom, but you can do that from sitting right there in your home. Somebody send you something. You can take what you know for a fact and put it down on paper and send it back to them and tell them, now, please provide me proof of claim that this is a lie. That's amazing how you can do that. You can do that. Okay. And let's look at, especially when you're dealing with the administrative process. When you're going through the administrative process, you want to be able to define everything that you're sending through that administrative process. You sent the initial affidavit. They didn't respond. They didn't respond all the way, or they didn't respond correctly, and they did not address your points. They didn't follow the instructions outlined in the affidavit, and they did not send you a response back as an affidavit. So we go to the notice of default with opportunity to cure, and we give them an additional more time. Then we go to a notice of default and dishonor when they didn't deal with the notice of default and opportunity to cure. So, and then finally, we're now officially ready because they're not responding, they're not coming out for the bail, so we can go ahead and file the complaint, and we can take the administrative portion of our will. And we can also do up our UCC-1 financing statement listing you as the creditor and them as the debtor. And we go ahead and file it on Indian Court. Now, it is at this point where it really gets good because you've already got a will on file that the court has already signed off on. You've attached documentation to your case. And whether you're looking at the documents or not, you can clearly file off right out your mouth off the top of your head because you know what you gave them. You know how to use them guns. They ain't just sitting there looking good. You see, you're able to define everything on it. Anybody ask you a question about it, or anybody try to ignore it, you're able to object. When they start talking legalese, then you know what they're talking about. You know when they object. You know, when they ask you, do you understand, you can tell them, no, I do not understand. I don't stand under any authority you're claiming to represent. I've given you such and such a thing. Now, let me clearly define what I've gave you because I need you to provide proof of claim to me to hear, and this is for the record, that what I gave you is a lie. You see? And you can only do that when you know what you got and what you have given them. You know how to use the authority of what you got because you have studied it. Okay. The definition of the word post originally meant any of a number of riders or runners posted at intervals to carry mail or messages in relays along a route. Post rider, a courier, Webster's New World Dictionary, Third Collegiate Edition, 1988, page 1054. The posts were initially set up for governmental purposes between different rulers in their own country as well as neighboring countries. Okay, if that's the case, and you are occupying the position of authority as a creditor, then you are a ruler. Okay? You have rights. You also have rights that's been given to you by the UN. The UN has created the Declaration of Human Rights. Okay, human rights. And it doesn't matter what human you are, but in the cases of Negro, colors, and blacks, they've been regarded as inhuman. Three-fifths of a man. In other words, we classify you as not being human, so that means that you ain't got no rights as a human guy. Okay, so we gotta deal with that, and it's very, very easy to do. Okay, very easy. We've already outlined that for you. Then we go on. The posts were initially set up for government purposes. Okay, but there was another entity known as the General Road Post Office, which was not for commercial purposes and was strictly for fellowship between the brothers, and they did it among themselves. Paul's letter was not delivered by Caesar's men, but by brothers in Christ, and that is the governmental post office, and they are different. One strictly for fellowship, the other for commercial purposes. Okay, so you see how that works. The current postal system, which is known as the United States Postal Service, is commercial, but it still retains the non-commercial aspect. It's based on the original General Post Office. It does not exist without tracing its roots to the original General Post Office. And as with everything, the created cannot do away with the creator. Therefore, that original creation by the brothers of fellowship and among each other is still in existence. They've never done away with it. And all their statutes, every time they came up with a new statutory entity, they never do away with the General Post Office. Therefore, it still exists. Okay, if it exists, we use it. To me, that makes sense. If they have not, if the United States has not clearly announced, clearly put out, clearly provided proof of claim that the bankruptcy that was done in 1933 is over with. They have given all of the people their gold back. Everybody that has dollar bills in a bank account, that money is to be returned to the Federal Reserve and replaced with gold, and you should be able to go to your bank and expect your gold. And we are the employer on your job. He needs to, instead of giving you a paycheck, he should need to give you a bag of gold, silver, whichever you prefer, and to make sure that it's all done correctly. Now, until this happens, we have to continue to do, because it hasn't been done away with. You understand what I'm saying to you? This hasn't been done away with. Okay. Now, we're going to take a quick break, and when I come back, if anybody have any questions or comments, it'll be time to raise your hand. I'll be right back.
Dedicate this song to little Junior Parker, a cousin of mine that's gone on, but we'd like to kind of carry on in his name. Stay.
Okay, Moses, we're back. Now, if we get to the point of understanding, then we can draw conclusions based on our level of understanding. To increase your level of understanding, you want to increase your study of definition. You want to increase, you see, the more you know about something, the better you can be, the more you can do. It is amazing the kind of power that you can wield once you know a thing. When you know that you know that you know, then you got some real story and you can do some things. But if you don't know anything, you're in some serious trouble, especially when it comes to contract law and you're trying to accomplish something and you're dealing with banks and you're dealing with, because what these people are doing is they are just simply trying you and forcing you into a position to prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that you know who you are. Walk into a courtroom, the first thing they're going to do is we're going to assume that you don't know who you are, so we're going to call your name and see what you do. All right. And if you come in here and say, well, that's not me, and I'm a, you know, so-and-so-and-so, well, the court has decided that, do you live at so-and-so-and-so? We need to know if you know how to get around that. Are you such and such a person? Where do you work? And all this stuff, anything to see if you are going to remain in the subservient position, or are you going to prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that you are not a corporate fiction, you are a man or a woman, and you know the rules of the game, you know what's going on, and you are prepared to defend yourself and to put them in their position. Now, we don't have to do this by arguing and fussing and fighting. We don't have to do none of that. All we got to do is know and with confidence do what we have to do. Now, we also have to be prepared to provide or issue out some kind of punishment for those who would violate us. When we're being violated, then we have to deal with that. You know, we're going to have to deal with that. We cannot allow you to break the rules of the game, ignore the fact that I know better, and keep on going without suffering consequences. So we want to learn everything that we can about filing a lawsuit. We want to learn everything that we can about putting a lien on somebody. We want to learn everything that we can about suing their spouses as accessories after the fact in their private capacities and against their personal property. These are defense mechanisms. We want to list how much specifically we are asking for in seeking in damages. We want to be specific about the amount that we are expecting. And not only that, we're going to need to know how fast am I going to get paid as a result of this violation. See, we ain't leaving nothing to chance. We want to get it all out there. So when it comes to you, they will already know, okay, that guy there or that lady there is somebody we do not need to be tampering with, because they are thoroughly learned, they are thoroughly aware of what's going on, and they are able to defend themselves extremely effectively based on what they know. We don't know how they know this stuff like this, but some kind of way they know it. And we cannot be fooling around with these people, because they ain't playing with this thing. And if we fool with them, every time we fool with them, it's going to hurt us. It's going to cost us. We want to be able to pull an oath of office, examine it, compare it to the, if you're in Chicago, pull an oath of office, compare it to the Illinois Constitution, state constitution. It's, you know, whatever it takes, do the research, and then we're able to formulate our defense and bring it in and put it down on the table and make sure that it's on the record. Okay. Any kind of device that's hooked up in there, they got it now where you're not supposed to bring in it, any recording devices in the courtroom. In other words, you can't have that nothing where you can defend yourself against our tyranny. One guy told me that they had a glass cage up where he can't, you know, you can't say nothing. You can't issue nothing. You can't, you know, you just gotta just sit there and let us rob you. You know, you have to enter a plea. You have to, no. We ain't gonna be able to do that because we don't operate that way. We're going to deal with this. We will defend this. We will defend ourselves. Okay. Now let's go on. There were actually two different general post offices. The postmaster general today wears about seven hats, is about seven different entities to the postal system exists. He wears the original hat as a caretaker of the original general post office. He's also the caretaker of the general post office that was created on February 20th, 1792, which was for government business. The Act of February 20th, 1792 made detailed provisions for the post office and also established a separate general post office for governmental purposes. Chapters 8, an act to establish the post office and post roads within the United States, Section 3, and it be further enacted that there should be established at the seat of the government of the United States a general post office. Note that this one-page statutory creation by Congress established that general post office for government business at the seat of government of the United States in Washington, D.C. The general post office, which already existed, was never designated as being repealed in this act. In other words, this is just something they tacked on. Has not been repealed in any acts that follow. Therefore, it still remains in existence, separate from the governmental business set up by this act. Today, the stamp on an envelope pays for delivery of that envelope from the sender's post office to the receiver's post office. It does not pay for the cost when that envelope leaves the area behind the clerk's desk and get delivered to the receiver's address, mailbox, office box, mail slot, etc. This is a free service. The alternative to free mail delivery is to receive all postal matter, either in general delivery or through a general post office. The only duty of the postmaster is getting the mail through, not delivery at general post. General post is your post office, and you are the postmaster at 9998, and you must go there to the post office to claim the mail matter. Okay. Now that is the actual system that is set up in order for you to operate in this game effectively, and you can do that. But it's totally up to you. But even if we are not using that, you're still occupying the office of the state. Name and state, explanation of your new postal location. Well, we're not going to get in that. We just did that. But I'm going to go down here a little further. But inside Tahaka's archives, under the link, Ancient African Moors in America, you see the second PDF file. This is your estate manual. This is the manual that you will deal with all of the information that we're bringing to you right now in this brief that I'm explain to you here now. Alright. Let's see. Let's go down a little bit further. Sending and receiving certified and registered mail at General Post Office. It is suggested that you use USPS, United States Postal Service, International PS Form 2865, instead of domestic form PS Form 3811 when sending certified return receipt requested. You can sign for incoming certified and registered mail at General Post Office. It is addressed to the estate or executor office, then signed as executor or executrix. Okay? And you can do that as well. Because I know often you hear me telling you all to send mail, certified mail with return receipt. We got a caller with his hand raised here. Well, we had one. He dropped off. But anyway, you want to, when you go inside, the next time you go inside the post office, look around at the different slips and stuff that they have there for you to use. And you might want to take a few of them and bring them home and open up your law dictionaries and define them. Look them up to get a clear, concise understanding of the extent of their authority and what it means, what it can be used for, and all of this. And by doing this, you discover that there are a ton of things that you can do, a ton of things. But you won't be able to do it unless you can define what you're dealing with. Everything has to be defined. You want to be able to define everything, okay? And you got to also keep in mind what we're talking about now is we're talking about operating in commerce. We are talking about paperwork and all of this stuff here. But the basic premise of what I'm trying to get you to understand is to define for you so that you will be thoroughly furnished when you are dealing with different situations, if you're dealing with courts, if you're dealing with mortgage companies, if you're dealing with banks, credit card companies, student loan, child support people, anybody, you have to understand and who you are and what you can do and the tools that you have at your disposal to use. We don't want to be accused of they got this thing I now call paper terrorism, where you people are filing frivolous documents and stuff, and what is happening in a lot of cases is a lot of the documents are absolutely correct, but people on the other end that's receiving it have to go back to school and relearn what they should have learned in the first place. And so they've been receiving this information so regularly, and which requires understanding on their part, and their occupation does allow them the time to go over all this documentation and to clearly render proper judgment based on what they have. So, and then on top of that, it's being filed by somebody that they have already been accustomed to designating as debtors. But all of a sudden, all of these people now are beginning to act as creditors. So we got a problem. They're putting all the work on us and stuff, and then, you know, we gotta do something about it right here. So we label them as paper terrorists and frivolous lawsuits, and you can't file no more and all this stuff. So we have to have something ready and handy in order to deal with that when we're faced with it. If they come at us with that, then we have to go into the next phase and go on to the next situation to deal with that, you see. We have to deal with it. We can't just ever lay down and say, well, he said it's paper terrorism, man, so I got to, ain't nothing we could do. We got to just go along with that. No. That's not the way it goes. We don't lay down. Because in the first place, we're going to make sure that everything that we gave you is something that we can clearly define. We can clearly back up. So if you don't understand it, that's your fault. We got to go forward. We got to do something else. Even if we have to appeal or go to a high court. But either way it go, we're going to put it down. Okay? Now, we're going to go on to something else. And what I want to talk about now is after you have done your will, and you have gotten that will filed. Now, every individual that you're dealing with, every company that you're dealing with now, because we've not only got that record, that file on record as a deed, we may have a situation where we're dealing with the gas company, or the electric company, or we're dealing with a bank, or we're dealing with the mortgage company. In our response to these people, we want to make sure that if we are dealing with them by affidavit or any kind of response, I always recommend that you deal with them by affidavit, send certified mail with return receipt. But we want to make sure that if they have a problem with us, that they have a copy of our administrative portion of our will inside the packet that we send it to them. Okay, we'll make sure they have a copy of that so that they can clearly understand who and what they are dealing with. Before you even get started with the okey-doke, we want you to make sure you have that on file. Okay. See? So whatever it is that you come with, you got evidence of the fact that you've already put them on notice of these things. And if you have to go to court, you want to make sure that you take copies of the documents with the return receipts that they've signed and attach it to the copies of what you sent them and assign them to that court case. Assign it to the judge. Make sure he get everything in order. You want to make sure everything is in order, and this is where you are filing your records come in, so you're able to pick up the file, open the file. Everything pertaining to that situation is in order. You got all the records. You got the dates. You got the time. You got the signatures. You got everything. You got the entire administrative portion of process exhausted. You got copies of the UCC-1 financial statement clearly showing them as listed as debtors and U.S. creditors, already been made a copy of, already been notarized and signed and everything and stamped, and add that in there. And so now you're officially ready to defend what you have filed into the court record piece by piece. Any piece to come up, the judge can close his eyes, reach in the stack, and pull a piece out of there. You should be able to clearly define for him what he got, what it means, and what is the authority of it thereof. Right there at point blank range. For the record, okay? So in dealing with these companies, you want to make sure that you put them on notice of the fact of your position by giving them your contracts. Now, remember, somebody giving you a contract, if they created the contract, it benefits them. But when you provide them with your contract, it benefits you. But now, any contract you provide them with, this is a contract that you are prepared to enforce and to carry out because you know what's in it because you created it.
I've been asked over and over by a lot of people about the exercising your freedom of rights to travel. And that is something that I have done. I've done it quite well, and I do it today. However, it is something that you have to understand. First of all, there are things that you need to know in order to have the confidence to get out there on that pavement and defend yourself and be able to do this thing successfully. This information is contained in Tucker's Archives. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, and once you look over that page, click on TuckerArchives.org. Go over there, and you'll see Tucker's Archives Master Library, where the audio, video, the documentation, and everything else that you would need is right there available for you in order for you to exercise your freedom of rights to travel. That saves you a ton of money. That saves you jail. That keeps you from having to have a driver's license, tag, registration, and all that kind of stuff. www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Once you get there, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061. Try to call me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay. Now, let's go over here. It says here, and we're going to deal with something else, too. And we're talking about now going and getting other supporting information for the documentation that you are filing. Okay? And it's a good idea to include terms and definitions of terms in your response to these companies, or banks, or mortgage companies, and what have you. In other words, if you have used a successful bit of information at the top portion of whatever it is that you're sending them, if you're sending them an affidavit, you've clearly laid out all the terms, everything that you ask, and everything is done. If you have supporting information, you can write down or put down some of the terms that you may think they may not understand, and you will put that word out there and give the definition of that word, its location, where they can find the definition, the codes, the page number, and everything, and then go on to the next term all the way down the list until you get all the terms listed, and make sure that this is sent to them as well. That way they cannot be without excuse, because you've defined for them everything that you have given them. Anything that you think they may not understand has been defined in there. The following are additional case laws to keep in mind while reviewing the manufacturer's state of origin in the PDF form. A state cannot impose restrictions on acceptance of a license that will deprive the licensee of his constitutional rights. Ruckenbord versus Mullen, 102 Utah, 548-133, page 2, 325-144, ALR 839. There can be no sanction or penalty imposed upon one because of the exercise of a constitutional right. Sherrill versus Cullen, 481-F-945. You understand what I'm saying to you? No state shall convert a liability into a privilege, license it, and attach a fee to it. Murdoch versus Pennsylvania, 319 U.S. 105. A writing is void, ab initio, in the case of fraud, in the exception, and it need not be formally rescinded as a prerequisite to a right of avoidance. Bonatio versus Massachusetts Bonding Incorporated Company, 1943-58CA2D657-664. Now, I want to read off these few examples here. These are just examples to show you how you can add this kind of information in whatever it is that you are sending these people. And it's not like you are sending them a bunch of stuff, and you are expecting them to respond according to the terms of the affidavit without clearly letting them know that you clearly not only have put this information in the affidavit, but you are going to define for them the terminology that you use to put in the affidavit and send to them. So there is no way in the world that they can say, well, I didn't know, we thought we gave you this right here, we thought that was sufficient. And so, no. That's not true, because it says right here, this is the word right here, and here's the definition, here's the case law right here. Here's over here where you can look in the book and clearly see it for yourself. Would you like to read it for yourself? you see. So, when you understand and you do the little research and you put your stuff together, you want to make it impregnable. You want to make it to the point where there can be no room for excuse on the part of the person that you are sending what to? Your contract. Okay? You get a contract from a credit company. It's got all kind of stuff in there. Tons of information. They put it in small writing. And because they know that the average person is not going to read it, right? And then what we do is we sign it. And then when something don't go right, then what they do? They take that contract that they gave you and they enforce it on you. The reason why they're able to do that is because they understood what they gave you. You didn't read it, but you signed it. And it was their contract, and it was designed to benefit them. So what we're doing here is we're trying to teach you all the ins and outs of formulating your own contracts and understanding the authority that you can create and insert into the documentation that you are using when you are dealing with any of these people, okay? All right, now we're back inside to Hawker's Archives, and let's see what else we're going to dig up here. Let's see. Now we already discussed that. So, okay, let's deal with this one. Let's take a look at the old notice of understanding and intent and claim of right. Because in my opinion, this is a very, very valuable document. And it says right here that this is a notice of understanding and intent and claim of right. So we are using the notice of understanding and intent and claim of right, and it is a part of our arsenal. Then we need to be able to clearly define everything that we're putting in there. We want to make sure that it, too, is impregnable and that we can fire off right off the top of our head anything that we put in here and make it stick, because the information that we have contained in here is our understanding. We want them to just, hey, this is my understanding. You know, I know you said some stuff, but this is what I understand. I need you to correct me if this is wrong, because I'm claiming this as my right. Notice of understanding and intended claim of right. Where it is my understanding, United States of America is a common law jurisdiction. And where it is my understanding that equity before the law is paramount and mandatory. And where it is my understanding a statute is defined as a legislated rule of society which has been given the force of law. And where it is my understanding that society is defined as a number of people joined by mutual consent to deliberate, determine, and act for a common goal. And where it is my understanding the only form of government recognized as lawful in the United States of America is a representative one. Oh, very, very powerful understanding you have here. Where it is my understanding representation requires mutual consent. And where it is my understanding that in the absence of mutual consent, neither representation nor governance can exist. Now, please correct me if I have lied to you. I need somebody in here to please stop me. Please, I need your help. Please stop me when I lie to you. Now, we're going to put this here down there on paper, and we're going to make sure that we get it signed and notarized and all of this stuff. And don't forget down here. Now, furthermore, I claim my fee schedule for any transgression by peace officer, government principals or agents or justice system participants is $200 an hour or a portion thereof if being questioned, interrogated, or in any way detained, harassed, or otherwise regulated, and $2,000 an hour or a portion thereof if I'm handcuffed, transported, incarcerated, or subject to an adjudication process without my express, written, and notarized consent. Now, let's stop right there. We got this notice of understanding and intent and claim of right. We got it already filed on the record. We already know all the nuts and bolts and wiggle pins of how to enforce it. But if we are handcuffed or arrested or stuffed or incarcerated or whatever, we already have claimed the right. We already have the right on file. The court has already recognized that right because they have done what? They have signed it. They have stamped it. It's already filed into the court record as a deed. It's attached to my will. So now it's time. for us to go ahead and get the liens and stuff ready. Open up your lien cabinet and get the documents out there and get ready. Get the names of the violators. Do a little research. Find out where their wife at. Get the spouse. Find out what kind of property they got. If they got a house, boat, car, whatever. We're going to, we need to go ahead and get that there placed and attach that notice of understanding and intending claiming right to that thing. And make sure that the stamps are quite visible and make sure that everything that the court has signed off on to make it recognizing the fact that this is a legitimate contract. We've signed off on it. It has been accepted. The clerk has signed off on it and stamped it. And let's get this thing rolling and go ahead on and enforce this thing and so we can get on down in the court and present this thing on the record and go ahead and collect the fee schedule. Because we already said we got it. We're looking for $2,000 an hour. I was incarcerated on Sunday, handcuffed, stuffed, in jail. I didn't get out of there until Wednesday. I was arrested on Friday. I didn't get out of there, so I need to calculate exactly how much money you owe me. And his wife is an accessory after the fact. She's also liable. We're suing in your personal capacity. So we the use of any public attorneys is against the law. We need you to get your pension fund or whatever you got to get, and go and get your reach in your pocket and get your lawyer out and bring him with you so you can he can tell you us how you're gonna be able to pay this here. Do we need to garnish your wages or whatever need to be done to get this ball rolling right on your contract that you formulated? You understand? Okay.
Prior to the turn of the century, 95% of the people inside the United States were self-employed. Immediately after the turn of the century, we got 95% of the people working for just 5% of the population. What happened? Well, we have a lot of people that pay attention to television. You'll see your politicians will come on there, and they'll talk about the problems that we have, and then they'll talk about they're doing everything that they can to make sure that we provide more jobs. Well, if you're providing more jobs, common sense tells me that there'll be more and more people that are working for somebody else. When are you going to tell us about the people who are self-employed, you know, like the 95% in the beginning when we were prosperous people? But that's not the case. However, what we're here doing is we're providing you an opportunity to be an employer instead of an employee so that you can provide opportunity for other employers to be self-employed. Go to www.tahakapowernomics.net. That's www.tahakapowernomics.net. Once you sign up for the Platinum Matrix, you can receive absolutely free Tahaka Archives Master Library. We'll give that to you absolutely free as a result of you taking responsibility for your own self and then becoming an employer instead of an employee.
Okay, we're back. Now, I want to mention that on tomorrow night, we will be having another broadcast, and the title of that broadcast will be "Oh My God, They've Shot Jack." And we're going to look at the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy from a whole new different perspective. And there's going to be a whole lot of information being revealed here tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You do not want to miss this one. This will be a doozy. There's no doubt about it. Also, keep in mind, one more time, now, for those of you who don't have Tahaka's Archives Master Library, if you go to TahakaPowerNomics.net, www.TahakaPowerNomics.net, you can own your own business. By doing that, if you get wise enough, you got a job, it's time for us to start doing something a little bit different. We got to start using our wits. The only difference between broke people and rich people is how they think. Okay, you cannot have any silver and gold unless you can get a hold of it. And so if you are earning debt notes, we can take some of those debt notes and we can trade those debt notes for some real money. And you put that money up so that you can use it. Now, if you go over to talkofpowernomics.net, you can sign up for your Platinum Matrix. Now, that's your own business. You'll pay $79.99 for a magnificent package, MCA Powernomics package, which is a tremendous benefit package. And you only pay $36.99 a month. However, once you pay that $79.99 and you join up for the MCA Platinum package, we're going to give you Talk Archive Master Library absolutely free. Now, normally we ask a $60 donation for that archive. And I mean, there's tons of information in there. And what we do periodically, we come back, we add new information. And if there's anything in there that is expired, we remove it and we replace it with up-to-date information. Regular maintenance is done because it is a library. Just like in your city, you have a library in your city, trucks come up there and they bring books. And in a lot of cases, there are books that has to be removed from that library. And they put those, take the new stuff out and put it in and put take this stuff out and carry it away. And this library functions the same identical way. But the only difference is you don't have to go outside your home and go to the gas station and put any gas in your automobile to go downtown and pay for parking to go up in there and run in and out of there to put money in the meter. You don't have to do that. All you have to do is just cut your computer on, and you're right there. You can study at your leisure. If it's something that your children need to understand, if they're telling them Christopher Columbus discovered America, then you're not going to find that in there. But you will find the truth about Christopher Columbus and what really happened, and so that they can print this information off, and they can bring it in and present this as an alternative to the BS that's being propagated. Now, there's a ton of other information in there. If you need to know about survival, that's there. Contract law is there. Everything that we are dealing with here this evening is in there. Everything that I've been reading to you this evening is there. Your notice of understanding and intent and claim is your will is there. Your administrative portions to your will is there. Your law dictionaries are there. The entire set of Black's Law Dictionary is there. We're talking about a couple, $2,000-$3,000 worth of law books right there. Volume 1 through 9 is there. Bouvier's there. Oxford's there. The Essentials is there. You got it all right there. If you need to know how to hunt, fish, trap, all that's there. Anything about your ancient culture, your ancient story, the Moorish government is there. You need to know about the Moors. It's there. There are books that are listed in there you can study. The 14th Amendment is there. It's just a ton of information. If you need to know about canon law, it's there in printed form and video form. You got tons of videos. You got PDFs. You got words. You everything that you need is there. It's already there for you inside of Tahaka's archives, okay? And you can get that absolutely.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be Black because Blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police departments. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems, so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 0.0005% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly's, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Okay, Moses, we're back. We're going to go back over here inside the archives one more time. And we're going to deal with something else. Let's take a look at a notice of default. A notice of fault and dishonor. Let's take a look at that thing and see what we got here. Let's see. All right. It says notice of default in dishonor, opportunity to cure. Now, I don't use an opportunity to cure on a notice of fault and dishonor. I'm at that point prepared to actually file the complaint into the court. Presentment. First of all, we got the heading, certified mail number, notice of date. We got the claimant's name, and we got the respondent's name and address. Claimant's name and address, and the respondent's claimant address. We got your reference, John H. Doe, notice of default, an election to sell under deed of trust, trustee sale number, whatever the number is. And this is there are different types of notices of default, but we're just using this one as an outline to show you how this thing is set up. And whatever the situation is that you have, this document is a document that you use prior to actually filing the complaint into the court for the review of the case, in order to commence to being able to enforce the contracts that you have been providing with the people you're dealing with all this time. This is a notice of fault and dishonor upon the instruments presented by claimants on or about June 3rd, 2009 with the USPS certified mail article number 7,2222 and so on and so forth. Return receipt and received by respondents on or about June 3rd, 2009 at the address referenced above. Presentment on June 3rd, 2009, John Doe, Notary Public, requested of the claimants presented the following instruments herein and hereafter presentment to the respondents for the respondent's acceptance. Okay. You list everything that you have already sent to them, and you might want to give some explanations about what took place or what they sent you back, and you can list these as exhibits to clearly show that the contract was not satisfied, or it was not honored, it was not responded to, or whatever happened. You can list that there. Your commercial affidavit issued by the claimants, and deed on the date and the date and time. Letter from ABC Corporation dated April 29th. Notice of default and election to sale on the deed of trust. Reference copy of notice certified certificate of service and all of this stuff. So whatever it is that you have sent them, you can list that. Now, what happens is on this notice of fault and dishonor, you have made a complete listing of everything that has transpired up to this point previously that you've already went through. And this clearly shows, once again, why you had to send this this letter of dishonor, because you are clearly showing that they have not satisfied what you sent them in the first place. The whole thing hasn't been satisfied. That's just the bottom line of how that notice of default and dishonor operates. Now, the notice of default with opportunity to cure, you can point out what you have previously sent them and request that they honor that. And, of course, if they don't, then by the time limit, then you're going to the notice of default and dishonor. And that's when you lay everything out that has transpired previously and the fact that the situation haven't been remedied. We have exhausted the entire operation. There's nothing else that can be done. It's obvious to me that you have no intentions of satisfying this. According to the law that I presented to you by contract in the form of affidavit, everything was laid out, everything was clearly defined, so now we're officially ready to draw up the complaint and file the complaint in the court, and it is at that time that we will take a copy of everything that we have previously sent, the green card, which is the card that they clearly shows that they signed for it, they got it, there's no doubt about it. We got a certificate of service that we're going to attach to this thing to file it into the court to get it all in there, and we're going to attach the UCC-1 financing statement in there, which clearly identifies the debtor and creditor in this situation. Okay, and this is when you do this, you want to make sure that everything that you're filing in there is in order. We want to make sure that everything is in order. Everything is legible and readable and in order and nice and neat. We don't want to have no grease spots on nothing. We don't want to have no chicken grease on nothing. And this is why we want to make sure that everything is kept in a file, nice and clean and professional and in order. And before we file anything anywhere, we want to go over everything that we got. So whoever is looking at this, if the judge got this file up, he's able to go in order, step by step, point by point, piece by piece, all the way to the end to see exactly what your position is by the contract that you have formulated and that you have filed. That's very important. Because that's the final stage. Once you get it in there, then it is up to the court to put you on notice that we will hear the case on such and such a date. And it's at that time that is anything else that you think that you need to bring in there, any supporting information that you need to bring in there, that you got plenty of time to make sure that you got it. If you need to brush up on something, if you need to brush up how you're going to respond to anything that is said, how you're going to object to anything that is said, and all this stuff, you're thoroughly equipped to do so because you have learned how to clearly define everything in the contracts that you presented. See, these are your contracts. These are not contracts that somebody is sending you. This is your baby. This is what you're putting down on the record. You're in the catbird seat this time. And so you're going to use everything that you got to to make sure that you're able to get what you want. Okay, now, we're going to go back over here, and I keep going back over here to this estate. All right, let's take a look at one person's experience at the post office. One man included the executive letter without the reference to abandoned paperwork with his change of address form, informing the postmaster at 9999 that he was changing the mailing location of the estate to general post. He went to the post office and asked for his mail. He was told that they did not have it because it would have to be received at another post office, and they were working on it. He got a phone call from the post office that afternoon. They informed him that they had received it and were working on making the change. The next day, he received two phone calls. On the first phone call, he was told they had located where the post office was, and they were working on making the change. On the second call, he was told the change was complete. He was given a phone number to call to check for incoming mail. When he calls or goes to pick up the mail, their demeanor changes when he tells them his name. Some examples of success using the executive letter. Example 1, child custody case. A husband and wife going through a nasty divorce were involved in a child custody case. Wife had brought baseless but damaging allegations against husband. Wife hired a lawyer. Lawyer turned out to be the son of the judge hearing the case. Child services got involved and decided that the husband could only see the children under supervised visitation for 20 minutes each once a month. It was clear that the wife was going to be awarded full custody of the children at a court hearing. Father filed documentation that he was the executor of the estate. When the parties went to court, the father was recognized as executor of the children's estate and the children as property of the father's estate. Father was awarded custody of the children. The next day, the judge caseload was stripped from him. He seems to be removed from the bench. Lawyer has disappeared. Governor of the state has dispatched two special agents who had contacted the father to the county, apparently to put the court system back together again. Amazing. Example 2. Man on trial, set free and case dismissed. A man in jail awaited trial the next day, called his wife, who had received a sample of the executive letter. Wife reads the executive letter to the husband, who writes down every word. Man writes out executive letter in a long hand and signs in front of a notary. Man goes to court the next day and presents the executive letter to the judge. Judge reads the letter and immediately instructs the bailiff to release this man and get him out of his court. Man goes free and case is dropped. Amazing. There are quite a few examples of this. Here's another one. Man accused of practicing law without a license gets out of jail. A man who was charged with practicing law without a license was sent to jail. He presented the executive letter and got out of jail. Example of foreclosure stop. At least two cases have been reported where foreclosure was stopped using the executive letter, and another foreclosure was stopped in Maryland just before he went to stop garnishment and taking up payroll taxes. Man had been garnished by the IRS three times. He sent executive letters to the CFO of his company. The day after the company got the letter, everyone suddenly started acting cold toward the man. He got an EIN number for his estate with his executor, with him as executor. His immediate boss came back from vacation and was not as friendly as usual. He gave him the EIN for the estate. He took it and was shaken. He reads that he is dead, and yet he is executor of the estate. She sent the EIN number to the corporate. It gave her another copy of the executive letter and told her to inform payroll they had no authority to deduct anything from estate property, his check, other than medical insurance premium payments. The next business day, everyone at the company is once again talking to him and calling him sir, even though he is not in management. And these go on and on and on. I'm not going to go through all of this stuff. But I wanted to put it out there, and it seems that this is a very, very powerful document. So the only thing left and the only conclusion that we can possibly come to is to simply learn everything we can possibly learn about the estate and the estate letter and the use of it. I mean, that makes all the sense in the world. Now, as far as the mortgage company that I had, I sent them my documents along with my estate letter. And they tickled me. They had told me one time before they sold the mortgage to somebody else, said, "Well, could you just give us some money?" It was quite amazing, and I was having so much fun because I'm not the type of person to just you got some people who like to do things just to, you know, continue to do it and make it a way of life. I'm not that type of person. I'm the type that if I created something and I use it and it works and I know it works, then I'm done. I mean, I can go back to normal. I don't. I mean, it's not a big thing to me. I'm not going to, go out in the street because I got this new 44 and I know the new 44 works. I'm not going to go out in the street looking for some more people to use the 44 on. No, I'm not that type of person. I'm not going to do that. I'm not saying that I'm not going to defend myself if there's ever a problem that comes up, but it's not going to be something that I'm going to live with. I'm going to, exercising my freedom and rights to travel, I did that, promised that, been there, done that. It's no big thing to me. I'm not going to get out there and argue with nobody. If there's something that comes up or from out there or whatever, I'll just handle it, you know, in the same way I always handle it. But I'm going to, first of all, I'm going to be responsible for my actions in the first place to make sure that I'm not even ever stopped. If there's a stop sign, I'm going to stop at it because if I run the stop sign, someone may hit me, may kill me. I'm going to take responsibility for that. If the speed limit says 30 miles an hour, I'm going to do 30 miles an hour. I'm not, because I have the knowledge of how to do this and can defend myself about how to do it, I'm not going to go out in the streets and act irresponsible. I'm not going to do that, you know. There are laws that we can't see. There's a law called the law of centrifugal force. If you got a curb marked 30 miles an hour, because you exercise your freedom and right to travel, you can do what you want to do, so you think, you're going to go around that 30-mile-an-hour curve at 60 miles an hour. You're going to break the law of centrifugal force. Well, you're not going to break that law. You can't break the law. What's going to happen is that law going to break you, because something's going to happen. So you want to, you know, whatever laws is out there, you want to try to abide by the laws. Okay. Now, when someone breaks the law and try to tell you that you're not driving, you're not traveling, but you're driving, well, they should be able to supply you with the name and address of the company that's paying you to drive. If that's the case, I think that's a fair question to ask. And you don't have to argue with anybody about that, you see. And so, but the key is to be as responsible possibly can when you're out there. You have to watch out for the other guy, and if you see somebody speed and then acting a fool, whatever, get out of the way. Get out of the way. If you're in a hurry, ride your bumper, whatever, move over, let him back. Cause I'm down, he in a hurry to get that ticket somewhere. Get out of the way so he can go ahead on down the road and get it. Anyway, that's what I wanted to add about that. Getting your documentation in order and clearly understanding what it is you got. And it's very, very important. I want to encourage you all to get your, if you just go in the Black's Law Dictionary alone, you can just have fun just looking up different words that you've seen all your life, but you never took the time to clearly understand everything that they mean. And if you hear the word common law, you hear the word rights, human rights, declaration, look them up. Get a full and concise understanding of what it means, because you can run into situations where somebody's violating some of those words. And if you know the definition of it, then you can formulate some stuff and point out some things in your writings about whatever it is that you got going. Okay? All right. Hold on. I'm going to take a quick break. I need me some water. Y'all hold on.
Shining star for you to see what your life can truly be.
Affidavit of identity, because there's a lot of people don't understand. An affidavit of identity is just like an identification card. And the reason being is because, once again, it's your contract. It clearly has your title or whatever title you're going to use, your county. It says the affirmed hearing being first duly sworn upon oath does hereby state that my legal name is John Henry Doe, whatever that is, my current legal location or domicile, and put that down, city and the state, and you can put your private location, you can put your estate information there, your date of birth, presented, and the documentation that you presented as evidence to have this second form of identification set up. In my case, it was World Citizen Passport, a letter of judicial notice and of status to the notary as proof of my identity. This affidavit is sworn common law identity. Understand that if I willfully make false statements on an affidavit, I may be punished by fine or imprisonment. I certify under penalty of perjury on the Florida law that I know the contents of this affidavit signed by me and that the statements are true and correct. And now, of course, you go ahead and fill that on out. And the notary will sign that and stamp that. And that is an identification card. Now, if you want to, that's totally up to you, but I don't. You can put a thumbprint on that, or you can take a photograph and attach to that piece of paper, and you can get it laminated and use that as a form of identification. Now, if you don't use a photograph or a fingerprint, that still is identification. Okay? That's your identification. That the United States of America does not interfere with your right to make contract, and that is your contract. That's your identification card. Now, if you are in Texas, or if you're in Illinois, or if you're in New York or Detroit or whatever state that you are in, if you are accepting their identification, then they have designated you as a ward of their state and under their authority and their control. That's why when you are stopped on the road by a peace officer or a private contractor, the first thing they ask, well, do you have a driver's license? In other words, we need to see how much authority we have over you. If you have taken that and went down there and got that, and you walking around with that in your pocket, as I've been on occasion, because we're under the impression, a lot of us are under the impression, that a driver's license is a form of identification, but it's not. And you got companies out there that are requiring that people provide them with a driver's license. You got people who are trying to maybe get a job with the sheriff's department, and one of their requirements is that you have a valid driver's license. In other words, before you come in here, we have to have some type of authority. You need to have permission. Now, I remember years ago, I was told that when this thing first started, the only people that needed a driver's license was the police officer. That's the only one. The regular people didn't, civilians didn't need one. But now they've come up concocted this situation where they can make money selling you a driver's license. They can make money prosecuting you if you ain't got one. So people are running around here thinking that they need a driver's license and they ain't getting paid to drive nowhere from nobody. They made nine dimes. And they've been led to believe that the vehicle. Now, one thing that is amazing to me, where the transportation acts clearly describe and define the type of vehicle, the amount, how many doors on it, how much it should weigh, how much capacity it should hold to be classified as a commercial vehicle. You ride around in a Camry with a driver's license that does not fit the description, and ain't nobody paying you at the same time, and running down there getting it renewed every year. y'all got to excuse me. I laugh because I know how this robbery, how this particular robbery goes. But then when you talk to certain people and you try to explain this to them, they the ones who don't know it better, they're so scared. They've been brainwashed so long until you try to tell them the truth. They won't call you stupid. So you don't argue with those people. And just make sure that you are thoroughly furnished in the knowledge to defend your position. Because, you know, people that's out there, the highwaymen is out there extracting revenue from these people. And that's what they're doing. They're out there pulling people over, cutting on lights. No engine part, and on that where your tag light was at, the date on your tag, and well, in the first place, you ain't no business with now. In the first place, all kinds of stuff is going on with this game here, and I mean they making millions and millions and millions of dollars all over the United States. That game there, they be financing whole metropolises. With the money they don't rob you for. I had one gentleman, I was on one of the Blog Talk radio shows. He said, well, it's such a small matter, I think we ought to just go on and pay it. I said, you pay it. I said, don't be telling me about paying. You want to pay it? You pay it. Okay? You go. Don't tell me about, that we ought to just go on and be a servant in this position. No, you be. You do it. You go ahead and do it. Okay? Don't come telling me about you. Because you scared to get out there and abide by the law. You want to fold under a racketeering situation. Somebody rob you. I had another guy from New York City. He told me they had robbed him 8 times. I said, how you let somebody rob you 8 times? I said, what did you do? Well, I just got to the point where I already knew that it's coming, so I already just had enough money to give them. And I was like, what kind of what? What? I don't understand that. I don't understand that, man. How many of them did you shoot? No, I didn't shoot none of them, man. Lord, I understand that. I mean, you can't come down here. Down here where I'm at with that. Get out back where you come from. Anyway, let's go on back to the next situation. I want to talk to you about the importance of the notary. Now, anytime you are doing the documentation and you want to use a notary, you want to make sure that the notary that you're using is up to date. You don't want to get no notarized. No notary stamp on nothing, and his notary stamp done expired. You don't want to do none of that. You want to pay attention to everything that you're doing. You want to go over there just because he's a notary. Okay, all right, maybe he's a notary. Okay, well, let's make sure that everything is correct over there in his camp. Let's check that, too. Let's make sure that we got that done, too, that we understand that, too. We don't want to take nothing for granted. We want to make sure that we clearly is on top of everything that we're doing. Now, let's go back in here one more time. Will of Testament. Let's take a look at it. Let's take a look at that old will and see what it looks like. Okay, Will and Testament of John Henry Doe, as amended February 13th, 2009, in the name of the, whatever your God is, the grantor of all free will, all existence, all law and life, and all property and rights, I, so-and-so, the man known as John Henry Doe, once birthed in the state of Ohio at the geographical location known as the city of such and such a place, being of age and sound body and mind, do make, ordain, and declare this instrument to be the record of expression of the one and only true will of the grantor, settler, and testator as made known to me. Presence of is your name and as your witness name. For this cause, I, John Henry Doe, being duly sworn, hereby declare my intention to be known as what? In my case, as a Moorish American national, but not a citizen of the United States, new pro tuum, July 2nd, 1992. Possessing freehold by inheritance and progenitor, being a descendant of Moroccans and born in America with the blood of the ancient Moabites from the land of Moan, I am now merging of the legal and equitable title, thus dissolving the trust in all creatures arising herein. First, let it be known to all whom these presents come with God as my witness, that the grant confirms this instrument to be known as the one and only true will and testament, expressing accurately, grant us true intentions, thereby revoking all prior wills and codicils, hereby signed, sealed freely by my own hand. Okay, now, what I always tell people, when we get to the words first and second and third and so on and so forth, I always include in between first and second, or third and fourth, wherever you want to put it, information concerning my administrative portions of my will. I type that in there to attach that to that will, and I write it in as exhibits 1A and so forth on down the line, and attach that. And then I go on to construct the will and make sure that will is clearly all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted, everything is in order on that will, and that it is signed, it is notarized, it's stamped, the dates. I'm going to time that when I go down there and file in the courtroom. It's going to be close to the date that I'm actually going to file that into the court record as a deed and that administrative portion. But before I carry the administrative portion of that will in there along with that will, I'm going to make multiple copies of all of the administrative portion of the will, including the will itself. I'm going to file a copy of the will into the court record, but I'm also going to have copies of the entire will on hand in my own personal records. For my own personal self, in the event that anything comes up where I'm going to need to bring forth that will, okay? And the administrative portions, the copies that I make, I'm going to put them in a file to be used in dealing with, if I'm dealing with mortgage companies, if I'm dealing with banks, if I'm dealing with a student loan situation, a child support situation, able to simply get those copies out of the file and just simply drop the remaining documents that I'm going to need and attach that to it and file it into the court case. Simple as that. And you got your will on file. Something goes wrong. All your assets and all that stuff is listed there. And now we're ready to go on to the trust. We're ready to deal with the trust. Before we deal with that, we're going to look at the trust manual and pull out your law books and everything and clearly understand everything it is to know about a trust, period. Let's get the ABCs down first before we go into the express trust and all of this stuff here, let's just clearly define what a trust is. Let's do that first. And if we get the basic foundation of whatever it is that we are dealing with, we'll be successful. I would like to recommend Weiss Trust Manual to you. That's already in Tahaka's Archives as well. And you can start right there. You can study that right online. And there's another trust manual in there as well. But you can study those trust manuals and get the ABC down first, and then you can start graduating on up to something a little bit higher. You might want to get your express trust. You may want to add something to it or take something away, add your assets in there. You list your automobile as being owned by the trust and stuff, and all of that stuff. There's a ton of things that you can do, but the basic of what we have to understand is not just having the documents, but being able to enforce what documents we got based on what we know. And I keep saying that over and over because it is so important for us to get that down. We have to understand that because that's what it's all about. You know, that's just the bottom line. We have to understand. We have to have that. And if we got that understanding, we can do something. We got it.
Okay, brothers and sisters, listen up. If you got a problem with getting rid of your mortgage contract, if you're receiving anything in the mail from them, if you got a problem with student loans, banks, credit card companies, child support, the Internal Revenue Service, go to newfreehelpgroup.com. That's www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And when you get there, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we get you set up to get rid of the whole thing. www.newfreehelpgroup.com.
Okay, now we're back. Now let's deal with one other thing here, and that is the affidavit itself. Go ahead and get that out. I'll do that one time, and I hope you guys can hear this.
I'm going to show you two instruments of tyranny. First is a gun, a symbol of force, violence, and destruction. This is not the best instrument of tyranny. This is the type of thing used by tyrants who are stupid, clumsy, and desperate. When the masses are being controlled by this, they can clearly see they must destroy or escape whoever is pointing this at them. The smart tyrants use the other instrument of tyranny, paper. The paper on which is printed the auto registration you must show, the proof of insurance you must show, the tax form that you must file, the permit or license that you must pay for, the application you must fill out. Whether we realize it or not, we only submit to this because we are being threatened by this. What if we knew they did not have this? Would we do this? I wouldn't. When we do this, we are really reacting to this, tyranny. But just as a gun can be pointed in two directions, paper can be used by all parties. How can you use the power of paper? One way is something called an affidavit. An affidavit seems simple and harmless. It's simply a sworn statement of fact signed by a notary. But a lot more people have been robbed with this than with this. A properly executed affidavit is law until it is rebutted by another affidavit. Suppose you send your mortgage lender an affidavit that says you just discovered that the loan documents they asked you to sign have misrepresentations, lack of disclosure, or fraud. If you are wrong, you may go to jail for perjury. If you're right, you may get the deed to your house free and clear. An affidavit is a powerful thing. The author of an affidavit can take all the marbles. He can make the rule. In my affidavit, I can say, you hereby agree to pay me $50 a month unless you rebut this affidavit within 30 days. If you make the mistake of tossing that affidavit into your inbox, forgetting about it, 30 days later, you are a slave to me. Under the law, $50 per month of your earnings belongs to me. from your credit card company. These are the new terms of your credit card. The law says that you agree and accept the presented terms unless you respond and refuse to accept. If you respond, you can change those rules all you want. All you have to do is respond. That notice they sent you is not enforcement of their rules. That is an opportunity for you to agree with their rules by remaining silent. Send a notice back saying, you may not charge me any late fees, and I will not pay more than 5% interest on my credit card charges, and those are the terms you must accept if you wish to have me as a credit card customer. The credit card company does not rebut or cancel your card within your time limit. You are legally entitled to the terms you offer. Your announcements and demands are just as valid as theirs. If your notice is in the form of an affidavit, no judge, court, or officer may deny your claim, and the credit card company may not impose different terms unless you agree to them either by response or by silence. As odd as it seems, it's probably not a good idea to ever sign anything that you did not write yourself. If you write it, it benefits you. If they write it, it benefits them, and it probably costs you in a big way. An affidavit is not a complicated thing. Examples of them are easy to find. There's no particular layout that's required. Basically, it's a sworn statement of true and complete facts with a date and a notarized signature. If it affects another party, it must be presented to that party with a reasonable time for response. Large institutions are very good at sending notices, but they are not very good at reading and responding to notices they receive. That is not your problem. Institutional size and bureaucratic incompetence is not an excuse for anything. Send them the notice and hold them to the terms contained in that notice. If they refuse your terms, change the terms or walk away from the relationship. Just make sure that you always play by your rules, not theirs. That's what the Declaration of Independence is. Our rules, not theirs. Just as tyranny comes in many forms, revolutions come in many forms. We can have a nice nonviolent revolution. We can even do it all through the mail if we borrow a trick that institutions use against us. If this is used more effectively, then nobody will have to use this. But don't do it if you don't know what you're doing. Paper can be dangerous. I'm Jerry Day, and this is Matrix News Network.
Okay, Mose, be back. I wanted to run that little plug. That's right there on our website, newfreehelpgroup.com. You can go there and actually see this. But I wanted to point it out because that is a very, very powerful document, and that's what I use in dealing with people. I don't send any letters anywhere to anybody unless it's to a relative or something. But if we're dealing with companies, I'm going to put it in a form of an affidavit. I'm going to get it signed, witnessed, and notarized, and I'm going to send it certified mail with return receipt, because I simply need to know that I'm sending my contract. I need to know if you got my contract, and everything that's contained in that contract is what I put there in my contract, and I'm expecting you to respond to the rules of the affidavit, okay? And that's how I do that. That's with everything. You discover that you can, you know, a lot of people, they send letters to companies and stuff and just regular letters. They sign it and stuff and go and put it into the court record. And the judge is like, well, you know, we see a letter here, but we don't, you know, there is no law surrounding this. It's just something you wrote. It's just a letter. You take it, throw that to the side. Don't pay any attention to it. But now, if you got an affidavit, thing put up an affidavit, okay, now we got rules and regulations and guidelines. So now we got to take a look at this thing. We got to see how it went, what, you know, was there a reasonable time for response? When did you send it? Did somebody sign for it? Was there a response? Was there a rebut? Did you send me how did you respond to it? And remember what the guy said, affidavit must be responded to by affidavit. Now, one other thing,
I always remember that companies, large companies, especially mortgage companies and stuff, they are accustomed to sending you stuff, but they are not accustomed to responding to stuff that you send to them. And that's a good thing for you. And if they're sending you letters and stuff and nothing is coming in the form of a affidavit, and everything that you're sending to them is in the form of that, so that puts you in a much more favorable light, because you are playing by specific rules and guidelines, and your notary signature, not only is he occupying the office of Secretary of State, but he is, his signature and stamp acts as a witness to support the contract that you are sending them, you see. Many, many times I have sent affidavits, and the company's response just come by first-class mail. And, you know, I pull it out. It's not an affidavit form. It's just a regular letter, a company letterhead. And to me, that doesn't mean anything because I sent everything to you, certified mail with return receipt, in the form of an affidavit with witnesses and signatures and the notary stamp. So I need to, in order for that to be violated, somebody have to just outright, just downright break the law. And, of course, when they do, I have something for that. So what we're doing here now is we're winding down. I want to make mention one more time that tomorrow night we'll be dealing with the Kennedy assassination from an entirely different position this time. I sit out, I've listened to this thing two or three times, and it's incredible, and it's something that I never considered. I heard something a while back about it, but there wasn't a whole lot said about it afterwards, so I just dismiss it. But this guy, that he did a thorough investigation and know people personally. So I want to put him on and let him just blow the whistle on this thing. So we're going to do that tomorrow night, right here on Morris Talk Live 100 at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So make sure that you're here. We've already done up the ad. The ad is sitting right there on my wall on Facebook. Go there and take a look at that if you want to. And you can click on the little link and go over there to the Morris Talk page, and so you know where it is. The call-in number is there and all that. But we will be broadcasting that tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Morris Talk Live 100. We will be coming back in the future also. And we're going to deal specifically with the documentation behind your mortgage, the documentation behind your student loan, the documentation behind the child support, credit card company, all of that stuff. So make sure that you stay tuned in. And keep in mind that every Wednesday night at 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, every Wednesday night, we have our wealth building class. I hope you got pencil and paper handy. And the number to call in at 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is 712-432-3100. The access code is 865-074. That's 712-432-3100. Access code 865-074.
Greetings, family. We're about to embark on the one-year mark of Summit of the Moors. Summit of the Moors is a galvanizing event where we take all Moors from around the planet and we work on one particular agenda. And we have been working this agenda. And that agenda is three primary things: food, clothing, and shelter. Now, we are working on creating financial sectors owned and controlled by Moors in order to capture and create inheritable wealth for our children. We are talking about investing, partnerships, building, the application of controlling independent agricultural systems, real estate, housing, land, manufacturing, distribution, wholesale. These are the things that will make a nation. These are the things that will secure wealth for our children and our grandchildren's children. Summit of the Moors, January 10th through the 11th. Check us out on the website, summitofthemoors.com. Peace.
Okay. Moors, we're going to shut down a little early tonight. I hope you all got something out of this broadcast. And until tomorrow night, make sure you're here. For those of you who like to register with your government, the Moorish American government, go to www.moorishamericangov.org. Fill out the registration form there. Get your conference call number. They have the Moorish government have its conference call 7 days a week. You want to dial in at least as early as 7:30 or 7:45. There, and so that you can learn everything about what's going on with your government. And there's always a question and answer period where you can answer, ask what questions you have. If you need to know where Moors in your city, where you are, that's a part of the Moors government, they can give you that information. The Grand National Chairman, Elihu Pleasant Bay, the Moors American government, he can give you that information. And so that you can get in touch with the other Moors that are in your in the city right there where you are that you may not know that are part of that government. So that's the www.moorishamericangov.org, moorishamericangov.org website. And the number to dial is right there on that website. Also, you can scroll down toward the bottom of the website. And the broadcast, last broadcast that we done here, me and the Grand National Chairman is there. Anytime that we do a broadcast, I send over the widget so that he can place it on that website so you can listen to the broadcast that we hear and get some wisdom and knowledge out of that broadcast. Now, for those of you who have problems with the mortgage company, if you got problems with your debt collectors, you got problems with credit card company, banks, student loan problems, child support, IRS, go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. There are links there for you to click on, and that will take you over there to talkarchives.org. But investigate that page before you go anywhere. And once you checked it out, you check out the video stuff, then you can go over there to talkarchives.org. Those of you who are trying to start your own business, if you're trying to start your own business, go to www.tahakapowernomics.net. That's tahakapowernomics.net. Check out the video there. Scroll down the page. If you if you want to sign up for the Matrix, you get Tahaka Archives absolutely free. Taking responsibility for yourself and owning your own company, you get that library absolutely free. And down, if you scroll down a little further, right above the Contact Us spot at the bottom of that page, right above it, you will see a little small widget there that you can click on and listen to our wealth building class. Our system is set up in this way. You join the Matrix, you got your own business. You want to build a network with that. So what you do is encourage your prospects to dial into that number that I just gave you for the Wednesday night wealth building class and have them dial into the class so they can learn more about it. And what we do there, we teach you how to build your network. We teach you how to become successful with that thing and how to make money with your own network. That's right there at www.tahakapowernomics.net. Don't forget, those of you who are on Facebook, LinkedIn, MySpace, Google+, Twitter, wherever you at, send me a friend request to send it to Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and I will grant you access to my wall, and that way you can see all the stuff that we've placed there for your educational purposes. We have articles and stuff that we come out with at least once a week. There's a new article, and it's designed to benefit you and educate you and aid you.
So send your friend request. I'll go ahead and grant it. That'll give you access to my wall, and we're ready to go. All right. We come to the close of this broadcast. I have been your host, Tahako Monte L. Bates. I appreciate y'all for being here, and until tomorrow night, y'all have a good evening, okay?
Jesus.